All right. So, Mitch, real quick, just switch over to 23. And I just want to introduce the next agenda item here. We've asked Bryce Doty, the portfolio manager from SIT, to come in and talk about the LL Car strategy. And you might think, didn't we just talk to them earlier this year? And the answer is yes. The board approved it earlier this year. We wanted SIT to come in and kind of give an update on implementation because I think this is a strategy that more than the other strategies in our lineup here is very responsive to changes in perceived growth rates, perceived growth risks, and perceived inflation risks. And I thought this was a good time for Bryce to come in and talk about, it's been 6 months or so, what's going on with that portfolio, what is he seeing in terms of market risks? And I know he's always got a good macro outlook that I think can be informative to the trustees. So with that, if we could bring Bryce Doty in and move on to the next item.
Excellent, thank you. So yeah, next on our agenda for those keeping score, we are moving on to item nine, which is will be a presentation from SIT. There is Mr. Doty. He has joined us. Greetings.
Hello, everyone.
Good morning.
Good to see everyone. Before I dive in here, I just want to acknowledge how much we at SIT, appreciate what you're all doing to, really thoughtfully come up with an allocation strategy, a successful allocation strategy to meet both the short and long-term needs of the plan simultaneously. Me and my team in particular are just really grateful for the role that we get to play to help achieve those simultaneous goals. So thank you again for your trust in us. With that, I'm gonna try and share my screen here, which despite the multitude of opportunities to do this throughout COVID, I'm always amazed at how problematic it tends to be. So
You're
please let
in.
me know if you can see it. Okay,
You
that's
can. You're
fantastic.
good.
What a relief. So again, I'm Bryce Doty. I've been at SIT a long time, 26 years out of the, if we go to page four here, out of the 40-year history of the firm. The firm was founded by Gene Sitt and is now firmly in the hands of the second generation of the Sitt family. And so it's going to be around for a long, long time. The asset allocation shown in the pie box there, we've just grown a bit. Continue to grow kind of slowly and steadily over time since last time we met. I want to focus on page seven a little bit because once one, we just are very, very proud of how we can help clients, okay, and how we can change the lives of the constituents of our clients. Most of them are nonprofit, hospitals, universities, led pension plans. And three of the strategies on this list are incorporated into the risk diversifying strategy that we use for you. So like the third one down, short duration, we use in your liquidity strategy, and we also have it as part of a smaller part of the risk diversifying strategy. And if you go to the far right, the 10-year alpha ranking versus our peers is number one for that. You go down to the line just below that, it's a closed-end fund strategy. We are very opportunistically utilizing this closed-end fund strategy, as well as the one beneath it, the targeted opportunity. And again, it's just for special events. We're going in briefly into different funds, not briefly, but temporarily. And again, the alpha creation there is number one. Go to this. Also, I'd like to point you to the second to the bottom, our taxable munis. And Mitch did a nice job talking about how munis help the portfolio. The way we use taxable munis is with very high quality municipal bonds. So when there is the flight to quality, this strategy has actually been positive, unlike how munis in general were negative in the early part of the pandemic. Our strategy was positive. So you can see the alpha addition there is also very high. We've also mixed in there long treasuries. And we're doing it a little bit differently than just owning them, without paying attention to them. As Tim pointed out, that can be a little bit of a problem. If one just real simple example of it is recently we replaced a traditional long treasury with a long tip to just take advantage of the rise in inflation and further diversify the downside risk of the portfolio. Which brings me to page 9, our risk diversifying strategy. We're trying to achieve all those three goals that Tim mentioned, you know, positive returns, high degree of liquidity, and low to negative correlation to the equity market. So we're really, really focused on downside to equity market type of things. As a review on page 10, the different, you know, we show the role of different asset allocations here. The top one, taxable immunity, it's kind of an unsung hero. It has a lot of liquidity in the higher quality municipal bonds, especially in terms of flights to quality. I'll show you a chart on that that shows the last four times that corporate bonds did poorly, these did quite well. So it has nice downside protection. It has almost a zero or, you know, agnostic correlation to equities. Like, doesn't even seem to be affected by it. And still is a decent amount of yield. So it has some positive return. That is the going to always be the bulk of the portfolio. Okay. So that's the key one. There'll be a small allocation of long treasuries for those really sharp downturns, you know. Closed-end funds are the opportunistic way to add upside. We'll typically go into a closed-end fund if we see the opportunity for a 5 to 10 or even more than 10% annualized return opportunity. So that's where we get a lot of the positive upside. The governments are these short duration kind of governments that we've used in your liquidity portfolio, actually, but they're a smaller piece. They're very stabilizing. It's just kind of a nice cash surrogate when you want to take some money out of the markets, basically. The challenge with 30-year treasuries, but the allure of 30-year treasuries is shown simultaneously here on page 11. The reason people really like to use long treasuries as an allocation diversification away from S&P 500 is because they are negatively correlated. And the 30-year treasury in particular there, you can see it's got a pretty decent negative correlation. But it's not always negatively correlated. There are those few times when it's positively correlated, and we just experienced that in September, unfortunately. But if you look at the footnote down below there, it says that 7% of the time, there will be a quarter where both the S&P 500 and long treasuries go down. So it's not very frequent. And monthly, it's a little more frequent, but it's still only 13% of the time. And it's just not sustainable. It just doesn't do that month after month. So it's still a good idea to have some in there, but not to just do it blindly, I guess. So we love the active portfolio management flexibility that you've given us. So we're managing the portfolio in its totality to achieve the goal that you've given us to really manage the downside risk and still have the liquidity and the positive returns. That's basically what most of page 12 actually just says. So I'll let you read that on your own. The allocation, I just want to highlight on the top of the page here, the taxable munis on page 13 are going to be the big bulk in the driving impact of meeting these three simultaneous goals. The returns on page 14, the month that gave us a little bit of a black eye is September, where long treasuries actually did go down, and unfortunately the same time as S&P 500. But again, that's rare. And even though that did happen, if you look at the far right, the cumulative since inception return is still 2.6%. This is gross of fees, so take maybe 12 basis points off of that for that time period. And then, you know, as far as a positive 3% return or the A plus one, it's still over that. It's still, you know, almost probably 80 basis points over the S&P or over the CPI for that period. So again, achieving all the goals while also maintaining very, very high levels of liquidity. And then so far this month, we're another 50 basis points ahead of the aggregate plus one. And the portfolio is a positive return, the egg is negative. So it's continuing to achieve that goal. We're picking up some return, especially today with the 30-year yield dropping significantly. We're making up some of the ground from September already. You know, it just, those kind of things, those exceptions that occur just don't occur repeatedly. So it still is useful to have a sliver of those 30-year treasuries in there. But I do want to talk about a bit about duration and quality on page 15. So in the upper left, taxable munis is the tallest green bar, the highest weighting. And the quality, the highest bar is AA. So tons of quality and liquidity in there. The yield, 3% positive versus the egg of only 1.6. But look at this duration. We have changed this duration quite significantly. We're up the max of 7 years. So we're close to that of the summer. The summer is usually, it's the summer doldrums is kind of what we say in the bond market, where you'll just kind of plod along and sometimes tend to decline. You know, everyone's on vacation or whatever. Then they come back and the market comes back to life. And now the Fed is, you know, getting everyone revved up, and we're finally realizing that, you know, even though we've been calling about this since last spring, that inflation was going to be far more persistent than people thought, and the shortages would actually accelerate going into the Christmas shopping season, that, you know, no one cared until more recently. And so it's been time to shorten that duration up quite a bit, and that's benefiting us. In addition to that, we have allocated about 15% of the portfolio into inflation protected securities, either within closed end funds, a couple percent there, or by just owning outright treasuries and replacing some of the long duration traditional treasury exposure with the inflation protected ones. Incidentally, today, the 30-year TIP is outperforming the traditional 30-year treasury by about 0.75%. So as this concern over inflation is mounting, we can actually take advantage of that with the flexibility that we're given within this portfolio. On page 16, again, the bulk of the assets are in that AA. The overall quality is AA. Page 17, okay, closed-end funds here are 16%. And you could argue, okay, just be aware of the differentiation of how we're managing going in and out of these closed-end funds versus just always being in a fund-to-fund strategy. Now, this is very opportunistic. We're going into situations where a fund might be offering and rights offering. So closed-end funds, they can't grow, okay? They can't shrink. You want your money back, you have to sell your shares on the New York Stock Exchange. You can't redeem your money. And what's nice about that for us is we can go in and maybe buy shares cheaper than we would if we had to buy them directly from the fund. You can give them a discount oftentimes. But the discounts are narrow. People are just chasing yield. A lot of bond funds are paying like 5% dividends, and it's just, you know, fantastic. And people are just buying them like crazy. And so this allows these funds the opportunity to grow. They're like, wow, we could actually gain assets by offering our shareholders the right to buy an additional share for every 3 shares they have. But to incentivize them to do that, they'll say, okay, we'll let you exercise those rights to buy new shares at a 5 to 7% discount to where they're trading now. So the opportunity that this provides for your goal, to meet your goal, here you can pick up alpha without increasing your beta risk, without increasing your exposure to stocks and bonds, because we can actually hedge that out. We currently have a little bit of about 10% of the portfolio are in equity funds, where we have bought put options on the S&P 500. So if the S&P 500, you know, falls out of bed, goes down too much, you've protected yourself from that while still being able to capture that value from the rights offering. So that's how we can achieve, you know, 5, 10, 12% returns on some of these scenarios when you annualize it, because you can maybe make that 5% return over a 3-month period. And again, very, very uncorrelated to anything. You know, it's just tied to a very specific event. So that's a very opportunistic kind of allocation. But again, these taxable munis are the real workhorse. So I want to go to that. I want to spend some time on that. On page 21, look at the default rate. Oh, I can't really ever get this to highlight right. The default rate on an A-rated muni is 0.1% over a 10-year period, where it's 2% for corporates. Both are low, but the point is that it's 1/20th of the default risk in a muni than it is in a corporate bond. And we just love that. And again, we're mostly in the double A's, but there's no default risk. So that's kind of the historical default rate. Let's see how that plays out in real market times of duress. So on page 22, on the right side is the first quarter of 2020. You know, stocks were down 16%. Corporate bonds, even investment grade corporate bonds, just got smacked a little bit. High yield really got hurt. Our taxable muni strategy was positive. And not only was it positive first quarter of 20, it's been positive the last four times that, you know, the corporates got hurt. And two of those times stocks got hurt quite a bit. So that's why this has become, you know, a really key element to the strategy, because it's so, it does such a nice job meeting the goals of what, you know, Tim and his team and all of you are looking for. So it's kind of an all weather thing. And on page 23, you still get a decent amount of yield. The reason, there's multiple reasons for this. One is that taxable munis are not as well followed as tax exempt munis, because there's huge shops that have big tax exempt muni teams, right? And then there's, on the taxable bond side, they're following corporates. So this kind of falls in the middle, and there is less liquidity on a given, you know, any given day than a corporate bond or tax exempt muni. But as you can tell, when there's a flight to quality, the liquidity of these are great. Everyone wants them. And so it has the liquidity exactly when you need it for this strategy. So it's really unique how it really fits in. The yield is better than corporate bonds because, you know, it kind of falls in the middle a little bit. They are trading much more efficiently than this picture would indicate. Part of the reason that you gain this extra yield as well is they were left out of the purchase program by the Fed that happened after the pandemic. They said, we're going to buy corporates, we're going to buy all these things and all these, you know, whatever. They never highlighted taxable munis. And so we kind of, I don't know how long that yield advantage will last is what I'm saying, but it's nice to have while we can. And then on page 24, our rankings for our long-term strategy, we've been investing in taxable munis for a long, long time. And on the lower right, the quartile ranking versus managers that are using the egg as their benchmark. Okay, this is not really a fair comparison. It's not using people that are comparing themselves to other taxable munis. We're just trying to use this as a comparison to show why it helps you achieve your goal of beating the egg plus one. The return is just better up on top, and it's better in the bottom. The reason the green box, which is SIP, is it shows up above the different quartile boxes is because this lops off the top and bottom 5%, and taxable munis are just, you know, they're just that much better. So again, that's the reason for that component being such a large part of the portfolio. And closed-end funds, I wasn't going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but I had these pages in here, so in case you stumped me on questions. We do love the yield on page 27, okay? It is a nice yield enhancer to the strategy. And we are tracking a ton of funds. We track 460 funds, looking at any of them that have these different events that can allow alpha that has nothing to do with politics, the bond market, the Fed, the pandemic. It's just nice to have a source of return that's just independent of all those other factors. And so we have about 10 different individual situations that are developing and have already you know, your portfolio has already benefited from a couple of them, even though it's only been a short time period. But we have about 10 that will come to fruition over the next 6 to 8 months. And that should add some additional alpha to the portfolio. That's all I was going to cover for sake of time and allow some questions.
Okay, David, well, you had a thumbs up, David. Did you have a question or a comment?
No, I just appreciated the presentation. Thanks for the information.
Typically, as a bond manager, our goal is to get everyone to kind of glaze over. So, you know, we don't want anyone on the edge of their seat. So, looks like I achieved that. So,
mission accomplished. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic.
So as always, it's a very interesting and engaging discussion, actually. You know, this kind of, this is what active management looks like, is what I would say, in terms of, this is a 100% opportunistic management scheme. It looks like to me. That's my quick and dirty on it, Bryce. Yeah. It's just driven by looking for every possible opportunity that not doesn't necessarily and likely doesn't have a correlation to some other event or market.
Right, exactly. All with the consistent goal of trying to minimize that downside risk to equities. And with that driving, you know, that bright star, you know, guiding us, we're looking for every opportunity along the way as we maintain that goal and keep that goal in focus.
Well, we hope you keep finding them.
Yeah, there's plenty out there. And I think year end's going to be a bumpy road for people. With year end, everyone's going to be wondering what's going on with taxes and what to do and what not to do. And so we are building a little bit of a cash position to try and, you know, have some powder dry to take advantage of that. We'll probably have the equity strategy 100% hedged going into December, even if it's just a small part of the portfolio, just to have zero volatility from that. And just kind of hunker down a little bit. And inflation, with the Fed starting to talk more and more about tapering and things like that, you're probably going to see hopefully some more opportunity and some interesting things there too in the first and second quarter of next year. And that's kind of what we're looking to see play out. And that's another reason to bring the duration in and have some powder dry to be a little more opportunistic going forward.
Excellent. I don't see any questions, Bryce. I think you glazed them. You got them.
Good. Now I have to figure out how to unshare my screen.
If there's no trustee questions, I just had one question for Bryce. When you took a look at the inflation debate and the team transitory versus team permanent and that sort of thing, how do you think about how that discussion filters through into the universe of fixed income securities you're taking a look at here?
Yeah, I think the transitory term was born out of the Fed's acknowledgement internally that they can't do anything about it, about the supply chain issues. So they're like, well, we don't want to admit that. So let's just say it's transitory. But all of the elements are very, very independent of each other and should be thought of very uniquely. Like here's a stunner. Real estate can't go up 20% a year. So a year from now, in relation to Tim's question, you know, the real estate market home prices could actually dip a bit then. So, and so it's like, well, is it transitory? Well, it's going to be up sharply and then take a small hit, you know, that's very unique to other things. Like wages are sticky. They're not going to have that pattern at all. If anything, they're going to accelerate a bit and then stay at an elevated rate. Shipping costs. Well, until you get more truck drivers to get all the containers out of the ports where they no longer have to put them. I don't know if you've seen this, but they just got approval to stack the containers higher. That's not a long-term solution. Okay. that's an indication of worsening problems. So the canary in the coal mine to kind of keep in mind, Tim, is the the cash that's building up at the Fed's repo facility is up over a trillion. It's like 1.4 trillion. We need people's savings to like get burned through. We need lending to start, that's just starting to pick up at banks. You know, they have to start using that cash and taking that, siphoning some of that cash off to bring normalized markets. Unfortunately, normalized markets also means yields go up and stocks stop going up. And that's probably all going to happen around about a year from now. The third quarter of next year is where I think you're definitely going to want to be having the risk diversifying strategy on alert, you know, to be tapped. The interest rates, ironically, will be going up as the economy starts to slow, as the savings are burned off, as maybe taxes are taking a bite, as the Fed is finished tapering by, let's say, June, and savings, you know, all of these things are in the fiscal cliff. Okay, there's going to be less fiscal spending. All of those things have been suppressing yields as the economy's been on fire, the exact opposite of what you'd normally expect. Well, conversely, a year from now, economy's going to start slow. There's going to be less cash chasing so many assets. And you'll see that repo assets at the Fed, where, you know, no one knows where to put their cash, so the banks are just storing at the Fed, that'll start coming down, and then there'll be less money suppressing yield. So ironically, and it's just a huge weird paradigm shift, rates will be going up as the economy is starting to slow. You thought that was just a simple question, didn't you? There's so many cross currents, it's a mess.
I noticed that one of those captains has taken a unique approach to this supply chain issue. He chose to offload some of the containers while he's still at sea. You saw that?
Had not seen that, Jerry.
Yeah, it was up north. About 15 containers went overboard.
Oh my gosh!
That, you know, hopefully there's nothing important in there. That guy was running a really bad day too, because literally the same captain. There was some high-risk storage container or something that caught fire on the same ship. So you think you're having a bad day.
Wow. Wow, that's brutal. Yeah, Canada's doing all right. They're back to full employment pre-pandemic. The what's rattling the markets today is they're like, hey, we're doing well. We might raise rates pretty soon. And, you know, unfortunately, we're just not there.
Well, it's a different discussion than my Econ 101 class, I can tell you that, way back when.
Yeah, all the rules are like thrown out the window. What's going on?
The textbook is a little different these days.
Yeah, oh, totally.
Well, are there any other comments or questions for Bryce? That was very interesting, as always, and I learned a lot. Learned something new every day, but I learned a lot today.
All right. Well, thank you again, everyone.
Well, thank you, Bryce. It was very, very engaging, and we look forward to the next time.
Great. Likewise.
All right. Thanks. Bye. All right. So how's everybody doing? How are we? Are we good without a break? You want to keep plowing?
I vote to keep plowing. Plowing is good. Keep plowing.
Plow we shall. All right.